And in our usual Tuesday news segment, we welcome Luke Stoddard-Nathan from the Alt newspaper. Today is no different. Welcome, Luke.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So what's in the news this week?
So this week, or last week, at the tail end of last week, I'll say, I put out a story that looked at a new report that was just released by the New York State Bar Association, big group of lawyers across the state, basically. And they have various committees. And one of these committees was tasked with looking at the New York State court system, more specifically the town and village courts, better known as justice courts, that are around the state.
So where you would go if you got a parking ticket or a speeding ticket or something like that?
So there's city courts, right, like Troy City Court, Rensselaer City Court, Albany City Court, and then even smaller than that is sort of like a separate system of town and village courts. Yeah, so if you got a parking ticket in Troy, you'd go to Troy City Court. But yes, if you got a parking ticket, or if you were accused of more serious crimes, actually, at least for your arraignment, you would go to, say, you know, East Greenbush Town Court, or, you know, any of those. So there's over 1,000 town and village courts in New York State, and you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge, which is always sorts of surprises people, because, you know, they often don't have. I won't say they don't have big caseloads, but they certainly don't handle as many cases as, like, you know, say you would in Troy City Court. And, you know, they're all sorts of venues for these town and village courts.
Are these judges elected, or are they appointed, or how do they come to these positions?
I believe they're elected. Usually it's a part-time job, or often I should say it's a part-time job to be a town and village court judge. Some are lawyers, some aren't, you know. Some courts are barns, some courts are garages, it can be any, there's many different types of arrangements. So this court system has long been kind of scrutinized, as like, you know, that's pretty interesting that you don't have to be a lawyer, and that, you know, they're not always courts of record. Sometimes there's not very good records kind of about, like, what sort of the proceedings, and every year you'll hear the Commission on Judicial Conduct censoring a town judge or a village judge for some reason, you know, so they may be kind of understaffed, or they
sounds questionable,
right? So especially I think attorneys in the state have sort of called this into question, because, you know, as is maybe in their interest, you know, they think that, you know, judges should be trained in the law, and these judges, I should say, do undergo sort of state mandated training, but they're not lawyers, you know, so that professional organizations have sort of eyed this with some skepticism. Anyway, so the New York State Bar Association put out this long 200-page report. It contains a host of different recommendations about training, and different sort of facets. And the areas that I thought were most interesting was, before these recommendations, they looked at a lot of different findings. And there's this new program in New York State overseen by the Office of Indigent Legal Services called Counsel at First Appearance. Under the New York State Constitution, and I believe under the U.S. Constitution as well, basically defendants are guaranteed counsel at all stages of a criminal proceeding, right? So from the moment that you're basically arraigned, which is the first part, when you walk in front of a judge and the charges are formally read, and you're told kind of what you're accused of, and you enter a plea of guilty or not guilty, and then you're also matters of bail are also discussed as well, whether you're going to be released before trial or not, or have to pay money to be able to not go to jail before your trial. And so that's a really important stage in the proceeding. And New York State was sued maybe 10 years ago by a number of sort of plaintiffs, basically saying that the quality of defense counsel, and specifically the access to counsel at the first time you're in front of the judge at that arraignment, was insufficient. And it related to four counties. It was eventually settled in 2014, and New York State basically said, okay, we'll work in good faith over a number of years to basically ensure that everybody has counsel at first appearance in these specific counties. But then the state, the governor, and the legislature then agreed, basically in another sort of phased implementation, to ensure that in every county across the state, whether at a town or village court, or whether in the city court, you know, whatever, you'll have counsel at arraignment, among some other reforms that they included as well. And so by now, I believe a little over 30 counties are now participating in this Council at First Appearance program, but that doesn't mean that they all have Council at First Appearance everywhere now. Rensselaer County, for instance, is a participant in this program, but that not in all the town and village courts and not at all hours of the night. You're supposed to be arraigned, I should say, fairly quickly. Some people say within 48 hours. There's some people who would say that it needs to be more immediate than that.
These are all the practical, like, sort of manifestations of their constitutional right to a fair
Right. It's trial. Okay, this the law says this. How then do we implement this given that we have all these different courts with these, you know, with varying degrees of resources? You know, what's the best way that we can kind of streamline this sprawling system that we have? What the report has found. So it started to look at this council appearance so far and look at how New York is doing, kind of implementing this reform. And what they found was that the council at first appearance program works pretty well. So in the counties that are participating now, more defendants now are represented at like 90% of the arraignments. The amounts of bail that are usually set have lowered in those counties. Judges are releasing more defendants on their own recognizance, meaning without bail. And police are even using desk appearance tickets more in those counties, meaning you don't even, like, you're basically, when you're arrested, they're not holding you for an arraignment. They'll just give you a form that says, hey, show up to court at such and such date. But that said, there are still sort of some issues, and some of those are that some judges, especially town and village court judges, are sort of resistant to this new kind of rule, all these rules, and some of them kind of accidentally on purpose forget to call attorneys about it, or they'll arraign defendants in jail without the attorney's knowledge, or they'll refuse to participate in the program altogether. And then another thing that they mentioned was kind of issues of attorney-client confidentiality in these courtrooms. And I've witnessed this firsthand. Sometimes in these courtrooms that we've built, you know, say in the not recently, there's no sort of conference rooms where attorneys can meet with defense, with their clients kind of in private. Like say right before the arraignment or something. So
they're kind of whispering in the back.
I may have talked about that on this show actually before. But they specifically mentioned that state police will not let defendants out of like arm's length and that they're hearing things. And, you know, and I reached out to the state police and asked about this, and they basically said, well, it's really, we're not against, you know, defendants talking to their attorneys with some degree of privacy at all, but a lot of these courts don't have any sort of secure room, and we can't let them out of, you know, our kind of custody because it wouldn't be safe. That's what they said. So, that's another sort of area that would probably ideally be addressed, but it costs money and needs a lot of people to agree to. What are you going to do? Just build a new court? I mean, maybe they should, but that, you know, that was another thing that was mentioned in the report.
To finance the building of a new court.
Yeah. And then the other sort of interesting initiative that they talked about in this report that I find really fascinating is that, one of the other sort of recommendations that the state court system has sort of started to kind of look at or start to implement, and this was after legislation, again, was passed fairly recently, was that they would just have a centralized arraignment part. So for every county would just have one. I would imagine Rensselaer County would probably be in Troy. It doesn't exist in Troy. This only exists so far in four counties. There's about to be a fifth, even though the program has basically been ongoing for over a year now, and the report was critical of that. They were saying, you know, we need to mandate these counties to force them to have these centralized arraignment parts. In other words, because if you imagine for the public defender's office, which maybe in a big county, I don't know, maybe they'll have a couple dozen attorneys. If they're a smaller county, they will have not that many attorneys. And public defenders represent indigent clients, poor people who are accused of crimes. And it can be very resource. It can be tough for public defenders. Say you're off the public defender's office in Rensselaer County is in Troy. If you have to go to, you know, I don't know, East Greenbush is pretty close, but a further away town in
Nassau or something.
Right. If you have to go to
3
Nassau
in the morning.
Exactly. For an arraignment, you're probably not going to be able to make that. So if everybody knew where to go, if there was one place where all the arraignments were done, say in Troy, it would probably make it a lot easier for public defenders. But again, they say the report says that they've gotten pushback from judges when they try to say, well, we should just arraign everybody in the same place, because they sort of fear that they'll lose sleep or have to learn a new computer system, or you know, the demands on judges would be too much. Although I should say that the New York State Magistrates Association, which represents town and village justices, say they support centralized arraignment parts. But the facts remain that very few of these have yet been adopted. And I talked to one state official who told me that, you know, it's just really hard to get everybody to agree. The DAs have to agree on where that part should be. The judges have to agree. The state has to agree. Defense attorneys have to agree. So there's a lot of different people with different interests. And so it's just hard to get to consensus. I'll mention one other thing about this report that I thought was interesting. It said that that judges should be better trained on the different forms of bail.
This is something you brought up on the show.
I'm a broken record, I guess. Yeah, but there's 9 different forms of bail.
Worth coming up. Yeah,
I think it's worth talking about again, because I think most people don't really know that there's 9 different kinds of bail under the statute, not just cash or bond. You can use a credit card. You can have unsecured bail. I definitely talked about this. And it seems like justices may not always know that themselves. So if they don't know it, how could they possibly use it? So I think that was important. And then they also mentioned that there's a language line that the state contracts with. So the state pays a company to do like 24 hours a day translations for defendants who don't speak English. That can be a problem, obviously, if you're trying to arraign someone who doesn't speak English, and that's not fair for them because they don't even know what they're being accused of.
Certainly
but
not.
Some justices, the report says, don't like to use their line or don't know they're allowed to use the line or whatever the reason is. So the report says that justices should be better kind of made aware of that.
It would be nice to have some more centralized training and maybe some sort of standardized system for allowing people to have so much power over other people's lives.
Right. I mean, again, the state does implement some training for town and village court justices, but I think that, you know, certainly from the State Bar Association's perspective, it could be improved.
Indeed.
I guess if I have time, I'll talk
please.
About one
Let's
other
talk
story.
Our local story.
Let's do local. So I reported a month or in March that the Troy Local Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit that the city basically controls for reasons that are maybe interesting but too complicated, and they own, again for reasons too probably interesting but probably too complicated to explain, they own a bunch of parcels of land in South Troy, just south of where the jail is, kind of by the Winanskill, just before the Menands Bridge. And on one of those parcels, they had leased it to a tenant that was going to do some sort of recycling facility that never really kind of went anywhere. And they eventually, after a few years, the Troy LDC wanted to evict this tenant, and they've been squabbling for a while, needless to say, and eventually they got the tenant to agree to leave the site within a matter of a few months. This was back in the summer, and remove these like piles of concrete debris that had accumulated there. And they fast forward to now. Or last month rather. So after the Troy LDC sued again last month to force this company to remove the piles of rubble, they then, after they sued, witnessed, or rather a city employee who kind of checks on the property for the LDC, saw that this contractor was just, rather than removing these piles of rubble, which according to a quote obtained by the LDC would cost about $60,000 to remove from the site, the city employee just saw the contractor sort of spreading the rubble around on the
classy,
on the
classic teenage boy move.
Yeah. And so the LDC was not happy about this, and they wrote a letter and they sent him a cease and desist, and they basically said, you know, what's going on here? In response, all these documents were recently filed in court. That's how I know about it. In response, the attorney for this company basically said, well, no, you're kind of not understanding this, our process, basically. And also, you should know, as I've said before, that that rubble was already there for decades, basically, or some of that rubble was already there for decades, because when they were building the jail maybe two decades ago, some of that rubble was put there and kind of was then like kind of gradually covered in as part of our process of removing this rubble that you want us to remove and complying with the agreement that we made. It was part of our process, so we weren't actually like doing what you said we were doing. It was kind of like a process that we were needed to do. But in any case, now the parties have agreed not to do anything pending further negotiations or anything. So I was just down. I rode my bike down, or a bike down to that site this morning, and there's no machinery there anymore, and the property just looks kind of empty with some rubble-ish looking stuff on it. So that's where that stands.
The rubble will wait.
The rubble is still there lying in wait. And I guess it's, you know, again, I've said this before, but it's an interesting site and it's an interesting area, because I think the city would eventually like to develop it into a shiny sort of industrial park with lots of jobs. And, you know, right now, if you go visit it, it's kind of cool. Like, there's a weird looking abandoned structures, and, you know, there's a transfer station there. It's definitely doesn't look like a 21st century, you know, kind of showpiece that any politician would currently want to go and cut a ribbon in front of. So I think that I would imagine that city officials, they didn't talk to me for this story, but I would imagine that they would prefer to have this kind of process wrapped up fairly soon. And probably the contractor would probably like to have this behind them as well, I would imagine.
Indeed, and perhaps the inmates in the jail would like have a less of an eyesore when they look out their tiny windows.
Perhaps
we can only yeah. Guess. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Luke, for joining us.
Thank
Always
you for
a pleasure.
Me.
Very informative and interesting.